Good evening, everybody. This is Brian Powers. I am here with my business partner and special guest host, Heather Warburton, down at New Jersey Revolution Radio Studios South. And this is a very special episode of NJRR Live. We've been away for a while. I've been enjoying my time away from the program, taking a little hiatus, refreshing, doing some new graphics. We're working on a couple of really cool projects that we're going to talk about in the commercial break. We're filming some documentaries and we're doing politics and I'm opposed to legalized weed now. Yeah, it's true. But we're going to get into that. We're going to get into that in just a few minutes. But first things first, let's welcome special guest host from Wine Women in Revolution. If you listen to New Jersey Revolution Radio podcasting, you've heard her awesome interviews on a weekly basis, new interviews. And she puts a classic interview in between those. Heather Warburton, how you doing, comrade?
Hey, I'm doing good tonight. How about you?
I am tired.
You're tired.
I was walking all day. I've been isolated pretty well here. I work from home anyway. My wife is a retail worker, a non-essential retail worker, so she's been home. And, I don't have much money, so, you know, it was nice to get out there. I had to get my cat neutered. And I want to give a shout-out to the Popcorn Animal Park down there in Lacey Township. Let me tell you, not only did they neuter my cat for free and take care and offered rabies shots and all that kind of stuff, but I went there just before COVID. And my comrade Miko, who we're going to get to know here over the next couple of weeks and months, sent me down there, and it was just before COVID, and I got there a little late. I woke up a little late. I got there a few minutes after drop-off time. They're like, "We're sorry, we're filled up, but we'll call you back when we have an open spot." They called me like 2 days later, like, "We're closing down for COVID. Sorry, we'll let you know." And then they called me last week again. "We're opening back up. Come on down." I took them down this morning. Loki is now less a couple of things that he used to have, but he's every bit the boy cat. Because we all know that gender exists in a kitty's mind, not in his testicles. So, but he's happy.
How's the kitty feeling tonight? Is he doing better?
He wants to go back out already. He came home. I mean, what they do, they don't, it's not a thing. Like, they put a little cut and they don't even use stitches anymore. There's no cone, no nothing. He came home. He was wanting to go chase birds. You could see him looking out the window. He's ready to get outside. I said, you know, we kept him in the house for a night though. I would keep him before he can go chase birds. You know, I got him to get rid of squirrels. So that was my day. How was your day?
My day was good. I was starting working on that documentary we're going to be teasing a little bit. I was looking at lots of pictures of my business partner today.
All right. Not too many spoilers now. Not too many spoilers. We have to first talk. We've been away for a while. And for those of you that may just be tuning in to New Jersey, it's been a little bit. We've been away. I'm going to go back away after this episode. We're not going to be back regular, I think, until the second week of June. It looks like we're going to start our regular episodes again on a weekly basis. There'll be a new time. There'll be new graphics. There's going to be all kinds of new stuff coming on. But in the meantime, action hasn't stopped. Corruption hasn't stopped. Shenanigans in New Jersey continue to be shenanigans. So let's start, since my guest host is here from South Jersey, where better to start our recap of political shenanigans than the great spot of Atlantic City, New Jersey?
This
is the wrong show, but what the fuck?
No, I think this gets to be a what the fuck. I'm going to take over for what the fuck here. Makes me happier than when a millionaire doesn't get his way. Like, my small heart grows two sizes whenever some rich idiot doesn't get his way. And that's what just happened in Atlantic City was, every couple of years, Norcross tries to take over Atlantic City in some way. They're taking over the water or, you know, and this time he was literally trying to take away their right to call referendums and to elect their own mayor. And they just voted in Atlantic City on this ballot measure to no longer be able to have ballot measures. And it was shot down so beautifully. It was like 5,000 to 1,000. So Norcross yet again failed to get his hands on Atlantic City. So that's been, you know, that's been the best news I think I've heard in a week. So that one just thrilled me a lot.
So to recap, I mean, how did this even get on the ballot? I mean, how do you get something on the ballot to take things off the ballot in the first place?
Right. They're literally
somebody hands me a petition. It's like, "Here, sign away your right to do this thing that I'm asking you to do."
Well, as you know, we both support unions quite a bit. You know, we both really believe in unions. But when there's corruption at the top of a union or bad leadership, then that union starts organizing around the wrong things. So Local 54, the leader, basically organized the petition drive that as people were coming into work, they were standing there with a clipboard of, hey, signed this petition to give away your rights to elect a mayor and to ever have ballot initiatives again. And they got enough signatures to get it on, but I don't think they got as many votes as they got signatures.
Yeah. And a lot of times, there's been like, we've seen all these shows where, you know, people go out, I think it was Penn and Teller, their show Bullshit, where they had people go out and sign a petition to ban H2O. And like there were people, you know, like signing the petition. He's like, here, let me hold your water while you sign this petition, you know. And they were like, oh, this sounds terrible, this H2O chemical, you know. And, it's so people will just kind of blindly follow this sometimes. And
well, I think there is also just a little bit of intimidation there. You know, your union is telling you to sign something as you're walking into work. Like,
yeah, I won't make that. That would be a very serious accusation to make. Does it exist? I've been involved in personally. I mean, I've gone to people in a union setting and told, you know, solicited ballots, for instance, and told people, listen, I'm supporting this guy. And I don't know that sometimes is painted as opposition. So I wouldn't say that they've been intimidated unless I actually heard somebody say, like, I'm gonna break your toes if you don't sign. And clearly that's, you know, over the line. You know, there shouldn't be a problem with unions, but I do think that's taking advantage of, you know, it's more that the union members trust you to do a job to represent them, and you're fucking around with a city council. That's not your job. You're a union leader. And these union leaders, and my big problem with them, they just don't know what their job is anymore. It's not your job. Your job is to represent members and collect a bargain and work on their work. Why in God's name are you fucking around with a city council structure? So far out of your purview, so far out of your responsibilities, so far out of what you're supposed to be paying attention to. How many members' grievances are getting ignored while you're fucking around for George Norcross?
Right. But thankfully, you know, no matter when this, whenever Norcross tries to get into Atlantic City, they push him back. So I've got to, you know, give so much credit that the rest of the state needs to follow Atlantic City's lead and push back against George Norcross.
Absolutely. And you're referring, of course, to the water battle a couple of years ago, right? He tried to come in there and take over the city's water and the city galvanized against it. So, you know, kudos to the proletariat comrades over there in Atlantic City that understand how to keep an oligarch out. So that's really important stuff. And thanks for, you know, staying on that. We're going to bring in Lori. Hi, Lori. How are you, Lori? You were just blinking. She was just blinking real quick.
I was just blinking.
How are you, Lori?
Actually, I was looking down at my book here.
Yes. What book is that, Lori? While we
the book that I am, that I've, it's called No More Measles. Let me see if I can get it so that it doesn't have the shiny thing on here. And you can get the electronic version of the book from New Jersey Revolution Radio as a fundraiser for New Jersey Revolution Radio.
Right.
And the book is about vaccination. What the vaccinations do and why you should get the ones that your doctor recommends for you and your children.
Right. And it's an ebook. I think it's three. Is it $3.99 or $2.99? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
I don't get any money from it. You know,
worst capitalist ever.
Yeah, oh, I just still don't know how we have a business. Like, how did this happen?
Well, there you go. I put a little scroll on the bottom. It's there. You can buy it on comic.com or through New Jersey.
Right. Oh, there, $3.99. Yeah, I wrote the book for love, not money. I want to eradicate measles. So all these other horrible diseases. That was my deep, deep, dark secret agenda in writing that book.
Yeah, I do definitely want to make sure that people understand, you know, that they should go back. If this is your first time listening to Lori, take a look at our website and, go to the search bar and type in Lori and all of her work will come up. She's been on the show a number of times. It's been a few weeks because of the hiatus and all that. But Heather and I were putting together this special episode. And we said, you know, everybody's starting to go back to work. It looks like there's an economic driver to get everybody back to work as opposed to a scientific driver. And when I talked to Lori, she said there's been some scientific advances and there's been some, I won't even see like new science, but some old science coming into play. And that's going to make me feel a lot better. When Lori tells me things are going well, it makes me feel a lot better than when Dear Leader Murphy tells me things are going well, or Goldman Sachs, or his panel of business and political experts, whom I don't care about. So, Comrade Lori, make me feel better about everybody going back to work, because I think we're all going to die. That's what I think right now.
Okay, well, the problem that we have is we have this disease that's easily spread from person to person by airborne droplets. And the only really effective way to prevent that kind of spread is vaccination. So any disease that's easily spread by from person to person by casual contact or especially airborne droplets, the only effective way to prevent that is vaccination. So that's why we don't vaccinate. Well, and plus we don't have a syphilis vaccine. We don't have a vaccine against syphilis, but you know, we can control syphilis without that, because that's, you know, you have to get so close up and personal to somebody to catch syphilis from them. The STD, the sexually transmitted diseases in general, are caused by germs that don't survive for very long outside the body. So, so you really need to, you really need intimate contact to catch them. So that's why we use, condoms and safe sex, all that kind of stuff to prevent STIs. And some things that are spread by contaminated sewage, we use water chlorination and sewage treatment and so forth. That's an effective way of controlling that. But for things like measles, mumps, rubella, meningitis, the bacterial meningitis, and so on, the only really effective way to prevent it is vaccination, which is why we, go to the trouble of vaccinating people. Now, with this COVID-19, there's no vaccine yet. They're working on it. There's been some, some encouraging results from the early vaccine studies. The other thing they're working on is testing. So they, now they have tests that seem to be pretty reliable, and I say seem to be because I haven't seen the studies on the test performance characteristics, because the antibodies with to the SARS-2 or SARS-CoV-2, which is the virus that causes the COVID-19, that could cross react with other things that you've been that you've been infected with. So you could theoretically get a false positive result from an antibody test. Now, the false positive result could mean that you were infected with something else that looks like COVID, but it's possible that those antibodies that look like COVID antibodies could protect you against COVID or not. I don't know. So they still need to do a lot of work, they still need to do a lot of work on figuring out how to interpret these tests. But the really good news is we were able to flatten the curve by people really this practicing the physical distancing, wearing masks, washing their hands, and it really has blunted this. Now there are people who, but this has caused untold misery to the population in terms of, people don't have a year's worth of savings to just lock themselves in their house for a year, especially working class people. Now, you could argue that, this is a problem of economic inequity. We should be paying the poor to stay home. But that's a question of economic policy. That's, as opposed to religious vaccine policy, which is really, mainly what I'm, here to talk about. But the main thing I'm concerned about right now, as far as vaccines are, because there's no COVID vaccine yet. People are falling behind in getting their kids the regular routine shots. This is going to be a problem because it's setting us up for the possibility of outbreaks of things like measles. And it's a particularly bad idea to fall behind on your routine vaccinations, especially the MMR vaccine right now, because the MMR vaccine it's a live vaccine. Not everybody can get it. See, 117 million kids at risk of missing measles vaccine during COVID-19.
This is the article that Lori sent to me before the show. Credit ABC News talking about these children at risk.
Yeah, so a lot of kids are missing their doctor visits, so they're missing their vaccinations. So they could, you know, they're going unvaccinated. Now, the thing that I'm concerned about because of the MMR in particular, because the MMR is a live vaccine, it tends to give a boost to the immune system, a general, non-specific, all-purpose boost to the immune system that lasts a couple of years. So if you ever needed a general all-purpose boost to your immune system, it's now when there's this other disease that's going around. Now, the other thing is there's some early results that they compared the protein that's in the rubella virus and some of the protein that's in the measles virus to some of the protein that's in the coronavirus that's going around. And they found some research at Cambridge University found that there's a similarity between the COVID-19 virus. The name of that virus is SARS-CoV-2. So the SARS-CoV-2 virus, which causes the COVID-19 disease, is very similar in terms of its protein structure to the rubella virus. So there's a possibility that the rubella component of the MMR vaccine can give you a little protection against COVID-19, which could be explain why people under 50 are so mildly hit by this relatively. I mean, there's this pivot, they call it a pivot point in the 50s when all of a sudden it becomes a much more dangerous disease. And people are saying, well, maybe it might be because these people had not been vaccinated against MMR in their youth, and that it's a possibility. So
does that general health boost last from when you got it? Like, I think I got my last booster back when I was like 18.
That would have worn off now, but it lasts a couple of years. And they noticed this from, you know, giving the measles, or it lasts until your next serious infection. But they noticed that when they did measles vaccination campaigns, they had a drop in death rates among the children. The drop in death rates was bigger than what you'd expect from just the number of measles deaths alone. And part of that is that the measles virus infects your immune system cells. The measles virus infects the cells that are supposed to kill viruses. So measles is such a severe infection because it infects your immune system. And measles causes long-lasting damage to the immune system because it kills off the B memory cells, which are like the hard drive of your immune system. So you really, 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 really want to prevent measles. But also make sure that anybody who is due for their MMR has had it already. And this is a good time to catch up on if they've fallen behind because of COVID-19 or for whatever reason, this is the time to catch up on your kid's vaccination. The MMR might not be enough to prevent you from getting sick from COVID or prevent you from getting infected, but it might be enough to keep your kid out of the hospital, and it might be enough to keep your kid from dying. So definitely keep up to date with the recommended vaccinations.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any little thing you can do to help seems, getting a vaccination, even if it just helps a little bit and 5%, that's still pretty significant.
Yeah, and there was an epidemiological study where they were comparing the exposure of different populations to the MMR vaccine, because there were some countries that were vaccinating adults to try to wipe out measles in their country. And, they found that the countries that had done that a lot have very, very low death rates from COVID-19. So when you're comparing one country with another, as far as what their social distancing or their contact tracing and all that kind of stuff, you got to realize that you can't necessarily draw conclusions from that, because if they had vaccinated if all the young men got the MMR because all the young men were, spent 2 years in the military, they're going to have a different, and if they get some protection from COVID-19, from this vaccine, they're going to have some protection in their population. So the success of their contact tracing as far as flattening their curve is going to be much better.
I wanted to ask, as we're, Okay, I was just getting a text message there from our guest. I see our one guest in the studio. Hi, Crystal. We'll be with you in just a minute. So I wanted to ask, as we return to work, I've been a little freaked out. I'll be honest with you. I'm looking at these pictures of people on the beaches. I'm seeing people in stores. I go out very, very rarely. I won't go into a store. I'm only doing curbside pickup. And I'm seeing people just still get close enough to each other. I went into a 7-Eleven briefly today because I was starving. It killed me to go in, but I had to get something to eat and I was on the road. And a guy is, you know, there's the social distance dots on the floor and he's right, you know, right up on my butt with no, you know, with his mask around his nose. And my concern is that, yes, the precautions may be out there. I'm still not sure. And to be honest with you, Lori, if our government's putting out correct science, I'll be honest with you. I think because the science is so early and my conversations with you indicate we're putting our best guess forward. But beyond that, human behavior is not dictated solely by what Governor Murphy says. It goes by the idea that it's okay to go out now. And I'm afraid that messaging translates into these unsafe behaviors, which I'm already seeing. So I kind of hear like the statement like, oh, we opened up a week ago and the curve didn't go. But that's not how this works. We've been going over this 2-week incubation period since day one. That hasn't changed. So how do we even know 1 week after you release these new regulations, whether they're actually working or not yet? He seems to be so, and my theory, and I'll espouse it here today, is that it's about money. These crying business owners are out there with Nazis flying flags and open up gyms because poor them, they got bills to pay. You know, boo-hoo. You like you said, the poor people should be kept, you know, allowed to stay home and be safe. That's not what's going to happen. We're going to force poor people back to work. That's what's going to happen. So that's my concern from an implementation angle right now. What do you see?
Well, one of the things that really concerns me is people talking about, well, we're going to use herd immunity as a strategy. It's like herd immunity is not a strategy. It's an endpoint. You know, it's not how you get from A to B. It's the outcome of what you may do. And you're going to get to herd immunity one of two ways, either by vaccinating everybody or by letting so many people get sick that you're going to have massive deaths. And a lot of people are, you know, they're happy. They're happy with the massive deaths as long as they don't lose too much revenue. And,
capitalism.
That's exactly. I mean, I'm seeing, you know, I get mad, I get angry, I get triggered a little bit when I see some of these idiotic posts. But lately, I haven't really been getting mad at Trump supporters anymore. I'm worried about them. I'm really worried. They're posting shit like, I don't care if 2% of the people die as long as I reelect Trump. What? That's what, and it kind of flipped on me, I guess, over the last couple of weeks where I was like getting pissed at all this racism and stupidity, which of course we're angered about. But now I'm just like, oh my God, these people really don't care if hundreds of thousands of people are dead. And we discussed my tweet. Heather, let's talk about his Twitter feed for a moment. This is who we should die for. You know what? I am a
Didn't
pretty
he released like 150 tweets in one like hour or something one time.
I think of myself as a pretty committed guy to my cause. I'd like to think that maybe I would lay down my life for something good someday, and I'd have the fortitude to do that in a courageous manner. Donald fucking Trump, I'm not dying for. Jesus Christ.
Well, this whole thing has been people are saying out loud the things they didn't used to say out loud. Like every capitalist used to be fine with 2% of the population dying for them to make money. But now they're just saying it out loud. Like that filter isn't there anymore.
I disagree. I don't think the average proletarian person was on that path. Until, you know, there was some backlash because we had a black man in office, but fuck them for that. But it was when Trump got into office, I think it revealed it from the capitalist class, and that's always been there. But from the working class, it started to develop. I saw it, it's just from seeing what I saw on social media, what I've seen in my family, you know, what I've seen with people close to me, is that when Donald Trump first started this nonsense, it was like a joke and they liked, but now they're seriously talking about, you know, basically slaughtering people, caging people, and it's funny to them. They think they call us names, like I'm weak when I say we shouldn't cage children. It doesn't make any sense to me anymore, and I'm just worried.
They often
we're going to get more into this in a few minutes, but I hate to end this, Glory, because you know you and I could babble on. We've had phone conversations that last endlessly about these conversations, and I do encourage everybody to check out Glory. Not only go to commieson.com and buy No More Measles, support New Jersey Revolution Radio, and educate yourself on the science behind this, but Glory does a ton of other work out there, so I want to let you run your mouth for another couple of minutes, Glory. Tell us what else you're up to. You're writing a book. You've got other books. You're an activist. You're a peace activist. Did you get your award yet? What else?
I did. I was person of the year for New Jersey Peace Action.
Wonderful.
And awesome. Then thank you. I'm going to be presenting a paper at the Bertrand Russell Society virtually. And it's about the nature of causality, which is a big, you know, what is cause and effect? Because most of a huge number of political decisions, medical decisions, all this hinge on some idea of what of the concept of cause and effect. And we do a really bad job of teaching people about it at every level, from high school science classes to medical school, because doctors have a lot of problems with causality. Mm-hmm. Let's see what else. Oh, and I'm writing a book now called The Game of Politics.
I know. I can't wait for this.
So it's going to be about that there's four different kinds of people in society. There's basically the people who have the power of violence, the people who have the power of money, the people who have the power of wisdom, and the people who have the power of number. This fourfold division has been recognized in everything from the Vedas to, you know, the ancient Hindu writings to European playing cards. I mean, this is a very old idea, and I just explain why it matters and how it lay the groundwork for Gandhi's theory of nonviolence.
Heather, you got any questions before our vaccine and medical documentarian expert leaves us?
Well, I mean, I guess it's a kind of a question/comment of, I just happened to go up to North Jersey recently, and there's definitely a different attitude about being out and about in North Jersey versus in South Jersey. Like, actually the traffic got lighter as I was heading up into North Jersey. And now, like, I'm terrified of what's going to happen since we haven't flattened the curve as much in South Jersey, when this weekend all the beaches are opened up. Like, where are we really in serious trouble? Should I be panicking about this?
Pray for wind.
Pray for wind.
There you go. Thank you very much, comrade. We'll talk to you soon. Right now, we're going to get into some commercials. But once again, Glory Endicott Thomas, author of No More Measles, amongst a whole bunch of other stuff out there. I got some new commercial music. You like it?
I do.
Justice and I picked this out. Justice is going to be popping into the studio in just a minute to talk about a really important event. But yeah, we were sitting around jamming one night. I think the last time he was here in studio, one of my last in studio guests before the disaster happened, we were hanging out. This is one of the ones he liked, so I figured I'd put it on. He's going to be on in a minute. Crystal Mort. Oh, is that my sound went out again? Ah. There we go. Sorry about that, everybody. My sound goes out here every once in a while. But first, let's talk about NJRR Productions. We are involved in a couple of interesting things. Some of you may remember a couple months back, we launched a documentary trailer for A Journey to Me. Heather, what's going on with A Journey to Me? What is that? First off, for those of those that don't know, what is it and where are we at?
So it's our very first documentary we're starting to produce, but it's going to be a bigger one. That's like an hour and a half. You know, it's a full length documentary about a friend of the show, friend of mine, who basically realized in his like late or his mid 40s that he was not living his authentic life. He was a pastor in Texas, married to a woman with a number of children, and realized his authentic self was gay. So it's sort of his struggles to become who he is today. And, you know, that's what the journey is. So we've done some good fundraising. We need to keep fundraising a lot more because these things are really expensive to make. But we've done enough fundraising. We're starting to be able to buy some equipment that we need for it. And the pastor and I are working on the scripts. We're timelining things out. And it is really going to be cool. It's just going to be cool.
It is. Thank you so much for all your hard work. And the other documentary is one that's going to feature me. So, you know, some of you who follow my personal Facebook page know I got canned from CWA Local 1033 here in New Jersey. and they're still hiding documents. And I just had enough. Not getting any results out of a legal process. I've got an entire executive board against me. And so I'm going to make a movie about it. And I'm going to make a short documentary about it, at least. We'll see if we can make a movie about it someday. You can contribute to these projects. So the bottom line is, whether it's a story about Blake and his journey through faith and his own, you know, who he is, whether it's my struggles as a worker who keeps getting screwed over by the bourgeoisie, whom, you know, don't appreciate my politics so much sometimes, or whether it's comrades who've gotten fired on the job, hurt in industrial accidents. You know, the working class always suffers the ill effects of capitalism. So, you know, these documentary productions, these video productions are meant to highlight struggles of the working class, and we hope you can support them. Check us out, www.njrevolutionradio.com. You can make a regular sustaining contribution. You can contribute directly towards these productions, whatever you want to do. The money's going to great use, and I want to thank everybody that's already given. All right? We're going to bring in somebody new. Somebody new. Because Justice ain't here yet. But Justice sent us a comrade of his. Crystal, how are you?
Hey, how are you?
All right. So you're Crystal Morgan's your last name, right?
Just Crystal Moore.
Just Crystal Moore. Okay, I'm sorry about that. I was trying to pop up, and every time I try to pop up something on my phone, it doesn't happen.
No worries.
Welcome to New Jersey Revolution Radio. How are you?
I'm good. I'm, you know, staying safe and healthy and active, and that's all you can ask for nowadays. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing good. That was just calling me right now on the phone, trying to figure out how to get into the video chat, I'm sure. So, Heather, if you could just do a little background on it. We'd love to hear Crystal. We know what's going down in Trend this Saturday. There's going to be another driving protest, but this one's pretty big. And when Justice talked to me about it before, very meaningful, because we're literally trying to save a whole lot of lives. Just so you know, for those of you that think that, you know, what's going on in a prison doesn't affect you, pull your head out of your tuchus for just one second. I live very close to a place called Rahway State Prison. We all call it Rahway if you're my age. It's now known as Northern State. All right. And I go shop. I live, it's a mile away, maybe not even. And when I go to the local convenience store, or when I go to pick up a gallon of milk, or there's a Quick Check right across there. It's a Quick Check. There's a Wawa. There's, you know, it's New Jersey, right? So there's Quick Checks and Wawas and 7-Elevens. I will tell you that 7 or 8 out of 10 times when I go into one of these stores to pick up whatever I'm picking up, there's a corrections officer in there. Just came off the job. They come in and out of there all day. Laundry goes in and out. I delivered flowers there. Phone men, when I worked for the phone company, go in and out of these prisons all day. This is not a place where people locked in and safe from society. This is a place where it's just people go in and bring it out. And to know that where I am here in Avenel, New Jersey, right by Rahway, is between a prison and about 3 train stops that go right into New York City and Newark. So these issues are coming around very, and it really hits home for me personally. So I thank you, Crystal, for of course what you're doing for the prisoners, but for also the communities that surround these prisons, which are put in more danger as a result of the conditions.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know, there's something called coercive mobility, right? It's the forced removal of people from the community when we have things like over policing and these ridiculously long sentences, and have long given up on the idea of prison as rehabilitation. It's now more of a punitive thing. But more often than not, people eventually do return back to communities. And so whatever damage we want to inflict on these individuals, we end up inflicting on communities for generations and generations. And it affects all of us. The fact is, if there weren't people going in and out, then COVID would have never even entered the prison system, right? But it is. And unfortunately, the conditions that people are living in there are so inhumane and terrifying right now. It's basically a death sentence. It's impossible to take even the smallest measures of self-care and prevention. Things like hand washing and healthcare and social distancing are just not happening in our prison systems. And they can't, as long as we have this level of overcrowding. And frankly, a DOC and a government administration that cares very little about transparency.
Murphy, I thought, was going to be releasing some prisoners for, you know, to battle. What happened with that? Like, did he ever release anyone?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Murphy sent out this executive order that basically said 1,100 to 1,200 people were eligible for having this medical furlough. So some people would be released. More often than not, people would not be actually really released. It would be a furlough, which basically means they can go for 30 days where they're on house arrest with a house arrest bracelet. During that time, they need to check in with their parole officer twice a day. For some people, that could be at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, depending on where they are in the alphabet. So it's sort of setting people up for failure, because if they fail to do that check-in, they're going right back to the prison system anyway. So I wouldn't even call it release, but you'd think that we could manage that for the people that we identified. In fact, we could not. The DOC and the Murphy administration has dragged their feet. I think at this point to date, it's been well over a month, and only about 85 people have actually been released. And again, I use that term release very loosely. So unfortunately, we already have 45 deaths, 41 imprisoned people, a nurse, and 3 officers. So like I said, this inaction is a death sentence for people who were never sentenced to death.
And I guess, can I start asking questions about the event that's coming up? Because it looks like Justice maybe is not going to be joining us. So what's this event that's happening?
Yeah, sure. Well, hopefully Justice does make it on. He's got great words of wisdom and inspiration, I'm sure, to share with everybody.
The evil corporations that run the cable company are keeping him out right now. I'm doing my best. But he said that you know what you're doing, so keep going.
So, yes, this event coming up, it's incredible. I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope that we'll see you there. Thank you for showing our registration page. So next Thursday, May 28th, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., we're asking folks to meet at the Trenton War Memorial for a caravan rally, but it's actually become so much bigger and also more somber than a caravan rally. It's now a Say Their Names, and that's the hashtag, Say Their Names, funeral procession and call to action. You know, we started thinking about this idea of let's do a car safe, COVID conscious rally at the Trenton War Memorial before Governor Murphy does his daily briefing, because he's yet to actually say the names of any of the people who have passed away in our prison system. He talks about their family members of people who have died from COVID, but never talks about these family members. And then we started thinking, well, you know what this actually looks like, right? All of these cars, each car wearing the name of someone who's either passed away already, who we've lost to COVID in the New Jersey prison system, or you'll see names in red for family members who are fighting for people who are still inside, who are fighting for their lives, and waiting for Governor Murphy to do something and to find some humanity. And so we started thinking what this really looks like at the Trenton War Memorial. It looks like a funeral procession. And really, we should give people the opportunity to honor and memorialize people, which they have really not been able to do because there's been such a lack of information, a lack of communication, a lack of respect. And so we wanted to give people that honor. We wanted to show respect to those people who have lives, their brothers and sisters, there's someone's child. And we also wanted to make a real point that Governor Murphy needs to decarcerate COVID-19 or say their names, because we don't want to have any more vigils, memorials, or funeral processions. So the time to act is now. So if I'm just going to, you know, shamelessly plug, if you want to come be at our rally, come register, sign up. We're asking folks to please come in a car with masks and gloves, because we do take COVID seriously. That's exactly why people should be released and why conditions should be improved. There will be faith leaders around, and we will also take political actions. I can't share them all yet, but it's going to be amazing. You can register by going to the registration page that you just saw, which is bit.ly/say their names rally. It's bit.ly/say their names rally. Easier to remember, you can check us out on Facebook and Twitter at NJCAIC. CAIC is spelled C-A-I-C. Or you can just literally Google hashtag say their names. and you'll see we're number one thing to pop up. You'll see our flyer for NJ Cake. You'll also see it for our partners, Salvation and Social Justice. We're a larger coalition. We work with so many great organizations who are really putting their all into this. But NJ Cake and Salvation and Social Justice, you'll definitely see it all over our social media. Just Google hashtag say their names, and you'll quickly see our flyer for the event, and that'll take you to our registration form. But come, call everybody that you know and that you've ever met, and bring everyone. Because unfortunately, Governor Murphy is only going to do something about this if we put enough public pressure on him. And so that's what we're asking folks to do.
Appreciate that. So I did scroll up some stuff. Sorry about the bad link I sent out there. It's I've been off for a few weeks, so I'm rusty. I apologize that. But I did put out the links on some of this chat stuff, and I appreciate everything that's going down. New Jersey Revolution Radio is going to be down there streaming live as you go around. Yeah, we're very excited. Now, you mentioned to me when we talked before this that this is kind of your brainchild a little bit. You helped bring foster.
Well, I work with an amazing team, but I live and breathe this event, as I'm sure many other
people. I keep talking over modesty. I don't like modesty.
There's been a ton of amazing folks working on this.
We all know things are a team effort, certainly. But it's you were with the idea from the very beginning. What have you organized before? What you've been like, you've been with Cake for how long, what else is, where does this rank in your like kind of organizing experience?
Sure. I think everyone has an organizer inside of them just waiting to come out. I've been sort of trying to engage with politics since I was a little kid, starting the first LGBTQA rights club organization in our high school, in college as well. And then I worked with NJ Purg for a long time. We worked on issues ranging from hunger and homelessness to ending Citizens United. We worked to keep fracking out of the Delaware water gap, and a lot of other really great campaigns I'm really proud of. More recently, I worked to stop Trump Care. I worked at 9 months pregnant on an abortion rights campaign in a conservative area of Pennsylvania, knocking on doors on election day through the end. And a week later, had my baby. And I couldn't be prouder for the future that we're building. Worked on voting rights campaigns. And I've seen the power of people power. You know, I worked on youth voting during Hurricane Sandy. And we had students at Rutgers that were literally living in the student center because their dorms and their homes were destroyed. And you can imagine the last thing on people's minds were voting. And yet we pushed and we saw a 70% increase in student vote turnout on that campus that year. So I've seen the power of people power. And NJ Cake is a campaign that's really close to my heart. I've been working on it, I think, for about a year, more heavily since last September, last August, actually, once we passed our Isolated Confinement Restriction Act. It's a really progressive bill, considered the most progressive bill of its kind in the country. It's now law, and the DOC is supposed to be implementing it this August. Essentially, what this act does is restrict who can be put into isolated confinement, for how long they can be put into isolated confinement, and tries to break down the lack of transparency around those issues. I've worked really heavily on NJ Cake's digital and on their social media. And, I work with great, amazing partners that work on the legislative aspect. Justice really spearheads a lot of our work with survivors. And we're very strongly led by survivors, allies, faith groups. There's so many great voices that go into working on this. It's really an amazing team effort, an amazing thing to be a part of. And I'm excited to see where it takes us. We've been building a lot of momentum. Last week, we had a town hall with the ACLU where family members spoke about the experiences of what they've been going through. We also had a virtual vigil. And so the next event is really to keep on building momentum and then use this to apply a pressure legislatively on Governor Murphy. Although we are calling for him to take more immediate action to pardon people, to release, we've identified about 4,000 people we don't think need to be in prison right now. And that would go a long way in reducing crowding and improving conditions for those that are left behind. So take action on whatever it is you care about. Take action and definitely come out and be part of this great event next Thursday.
Do you know what is the approximate prison population in New Jersey?
I believe, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's around 18,000 people.
Wow. And probably most of them are nonviolent offenders. Like most of them are probably just in for drug, arrests or something like that.
I mean, drug arrests are definitely a huge part of it. One of the stories that really sort of haunts me and keeps me up at night is just a week or two ago, Ricardo Williamson, who was 63 years old, passed away from COVID in New Jersey prisons. He just came into the prison system in January. He was sentenced at that time to 1 year for shoplifting. I think we should be so ashamed as a society that a 63-year-old man even needs to shoplift. And then our reaction was that we should lock him up, take away everything that he has left so that it's so near impossible to get a job after, to reassimilate after, to come back from an untraumatized state after. And now it ends up being a death sentence for him. That said, there are a great number of people who do have violent offenses. But I will say that what that means varies really widely from state to state. It also varies widely on the situation, the aggressiveness of the prosecutor. And for some of these people who may be committed acts that we'd rather not address, some of them have been in prison for 30 years and they're 70 years old and have, heart disease, and they're really not a threat to public safety. And have long since, paid dues. And frankly, if we were to invest more money in our communities, in our education, in our healthcare system, then we would have far less need to invest in building more and more cages for people to spend the rest of their lives in.
I'm not asking you to maybe just step outside your organizational representation duties for a little bit and ask you as an activist and as a person that's been involved, sees the system and how it treats people. Do you see models out there that you envy, that you wish we had, incorporate more into what we do here as far as, criminal justice and incarceration in the United States?
When you say, do I see models out there? Do you mean what other states, other countries?
Even one that's imagined, justice, myself, we all, I like to define myself as roughly a prison abolitionist, but I like to talk about a lot of details in that, but I think that's accurate for me personally. Is there something out there where either it's in your mind or you see another country doing something like, oh my God, we should just be doing this because it makes more sense?
I've been an activist for all my life, and I felt passionately about prison issues, but I don't think I really understood the concept of prison abolition until probably the last year or so. And thanks to many conversations with Bonnie Kernas of the American Friends Service Committee, who is amazing and brilliant, and really exposed me to what this could look like, because for so many of us, the idea of prison abolition is like, we can't imagine a world without prisons, right? Which is kind of messed up to begin with. And really, if you look back historically, it hasn't always been this way. Something that really sort of put things into perspective for me is that the United States, as a population as a whole, we have 5% of the world's population. But we have 25% of the world's prison population. Something there is really, really wrong. And the more that you dig into it and the more you look into our history of mass incarceration, the more really clear it is that there is some major structural issues. There's major structural racism at play. It's a war on poverty. It's a war on race. What I envision as this model for potential is that we have schools that are able to accommodate healthcare needs of students, that are able to be sort of community centers. We have investment in our more disadvantaged communities where the people in them own things, not, you know, oh, we're going to invest in this community. Let me go and buy a business there. And now we have gentrification. But no, the people who live there and who have lived there for decades should have purchasing power, should have political power. I think a lot of this comes down to the right to vote and then using that right actively. And so, you know, disenfranchisement and, you know, having people who are incarcerated not be able to vote is a really great way to remove a voting population from disadvantaged communities. And so we just sort of have this ever perpetuating cycle that goes deeper and deeper from person to person, community to community, and generation to generation. And I really think what the model for something better looks like involves investment in the community, in healthcare, in education, and increasing people's human capital investment. So their value to make something of their life. We're very like, pick yourself up by your bootstraps. And that's true, but we should actually give people the tools to do that. And if we think if we do those things, that we would have a lot less people in the prison system. We should also reevaluate what rehabilitation maybe looks like, right? If you have a drug offense, maybe we don't keep you in a cage and take away all your chances for a future. Maybe we help you get over that drug addiction, like we say we want to do with, you know, our white populations and our whiter drugs, and maybe offer that to all people. So I think. That offering people actual rehabilitation, investing in communities, and much shorter sentences, something where it's actually about rehabilitation. I think that would be a really great model that I would love my kids to grow up into.
And also, I think I did a show maybe like a year and a half ago with Asbury Park, what was it? Transformative Justice or Asbury Park, where they were really trying to seek a new kind of justice for people. And, you know, this holistic support of people when they come out, helping them, you know, really go seek justice for within themselves and with the, whatever their crime was at the time, is a really different sort of model where it's not just this punitive thing. So that kind of thing was really, they're doing great work with that organization. Hopefully they're still doing it.
that's great to hear. And that's exactly right. You know, especially when people are re-entering communities, it's in their interest, but it's in all of our interest for people to be healthy when they're doing that, for people to be supported when they're doing that, because it's the only way to actually keep the whole community safe. That's what public safety should look like, is helping everyone be a part of the community. When people re-enter from prison, I mean, they're often sent out with little more than a bus ticket and a whole lot of trauma, no access to real health care or, you know, real connections. And honestly, the science shows, the facts show, and fortunately people's lives show, that their highest risk of death is in the first 2 weeks upon reentry. And so we should be doing more. Yes.
Nightmares. It's common practice to just take prisoners off in the middle of the night and leave them at a bus stop. Like, they really do that shit still. Like, what do you expect them to do other than to go out and commit another crime right away? Because I mean, it's crazy, and so I appreciate you highlighting that stuff. We are winding down on time a little bit. I know you've gotten all your plugs in for this event, and those of you watching on the live stream, please share this out. Please get on the social media pages that Crystal told us about. You can see there on the bottom where you can go. Be safe no matter what you do. Thank you very much. But Crystal, we always make sure that we get as many plugs in, and it doesn't even have to be just about the events coming up. So please let us know where we can find you, your activities. Do you write? Do you blog? Do you have your own website? What do you got going on that we can pay attention to Crystal's activities?
I'm Crystal Moore. You can find me on Twitter and all that jazz. But really, you should go to NJCAIC. That's CAIC. Also check out Salvation and Social Justice. They're great partners. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Sign up for the event. Again, you can just look up hashtag say their names, and we're the funeral procession and call to action on May 28th. My general call to action is be active in everything, every day, with all your soul, because this is the thing that's going to change the world, all of us together.
Heather Warburton from Wine, Women, and Revolution. Plug stuff.
So coming up this Monday, I am going to be talking with people from the Uyghur Human Rights Project about kind of how what was happening with the Uyghur Muslims during the COVID crisis, and a little bit about some of the human rights violations that are being committed against the Uyghur people. And then Friday after that, not this Friday coming up, but the following Friday, is State of the Revolution with me and Jeremy. We're going to be talking some theory. We're going to be, instead of, actually, we're not even making people read a book this time. This time they can actually watch a video or listen to an audio recording.
You've been making people read books? That's amazing level of control.
We have been. Well, if they wanted to keep up with the show, they had to read what we were reading. But this time, actually, it's an audio recording. So.
Jerzy Stalin is proud. Jerzy Stalin is very proud. Thank you very much. You know, I really miss the show. You know, doing the show really reminded me how much I miss it. It's been a couple weeks since we've been around. We're going to go back on break, though. I do. You know, we're so busy with these documentary productions and all stuff. But when Justice called me and told me he's putting together a rally and it's going to save lives and it's going to save our comrades' lives in prison, and as a result, keep me and my family safer, we pop back on to make sure that we help this, and we want to make sure that you're out there and you get down to Trenton can to help them out. On the bottom you see scrolling
Thursday,
right now.
Thursday.
I'm sorry, Thursday. The date is right on the scroll, but yes, for the podcast. So let's make sure we get out to support this. The scroll on the bottom says that you can bring a canned good to the coffee house in Amboy Ave and Edison for a free cup of coffee. You help support Middlesex Mutual, another organization I'm involved with. We are feeding families that are falling through the cracks. Not everybody gets government aid. Not everybody has the right paperwork. And we need to make sure that all of our comrades are eating and kept safe during this time. The crisis is still going on. We still need to be safe. We still need to be careful. But we can still go out there and change the world. We can still go out there and protest, make our voices heard. So I'll be back in a couple more weeks with a brand new NJRR Live with some guest hosts and some new graphics and all kinds of fun stuff. But until then, I want all of my comrades out there to just remember, police can quit their jobs.
And this is Heather telling you the future is yours to create. Go out there and create it.
Good night, everybody. We'll see you soon.